VOA News.
Rohingya volunteers on the ground with the first responders, helping people to safety, supporting fire response efforts, and working to support relief efforts.
Aid rushes in as fire sweeps through Rohingya camp. It's Wednesday, March 24th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Australia down underwater. Another disease threatens. COVID heart damage. New York City struggles to reopen. A virtual South by Southwest. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Myanmar's military junta on Tuesday accused the leaders of the ongoing nationwide protests of arson and inciting violence and sought to justify last month's coup by repeating accusations of fraud against deposed de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi. The comments come a day after the United States and European Union imposed new sanctions against the military leaders for their February 1st coup and the subsequent crackdown on the protests against it. At a lengthy news conference Tuesday, the military presented displays of seized homemade weapons and videos of street battles to argue that the demonstrators are violent and that efforts to stop them are justified. A junta spokesman compared the military response to U.S. police responding to the January 6th siege at the U.S. Capitol. The spokesman said 164 protesters had been killed in Myanmar's violence and expressed sadness at the deaths. The Assistance Association for Political Prisoners activist group says it can verify at least 261 people have been killed by Myanmar security forces, but the total is likely much higher. It also reports from their Twitter account 2,682 have been arrested, charged, or sentenced, and 2,302 are still in detention or have outstanding warrants. Several of Myanmar's neighboring countries have condemned the violence, including Bangladesh, China, India, Laos, and Thailand. In Bangladesh, aid agencies report a massive fire that swept through a refugee camp in Cox's Bazar has killed at least 15 people, injured 560, and displaced more than 45,000 people. These numbers are likely to rise. Most of the victims are women and children. Aid agencies are rushing to find temporary shelter for the survivors and provide them with basic relief, as we hear from Lisa Schlein in Geneva.
UN refugee representative in Bangladesh, Johannes van der Klauw, calls the scale of the fire catastrophic. He says he has never before seen anything as massive and devastating. He says teams are on the ground dealing with the huge rescue and relief effort that is underway.
We have so far confirmed 15 people dead, 560 injured, 400 are still missing, and at least 10,000 shelters have been destroyed. That means at least 45,000 people are being displaced and for whom we seek now provisional shelter.
Van der Klauw says he expects the number of casualties to rise. He says the majority of refugees are women and children. They also are the most vulnerable. He says it is urgent to find places for them to stay where they will be safe and protected. Cox's Bazar is the world's largest refugee camp. It houses nearly 900,000 Rohingya refugees who fled violence and persecution in Myanmar in August 2017. More than half of this population is children. Spokesman for the UN Children's Fund, James Elder, says thousands of children caught in the fire need assistance. He says a UNICEF team is in Cox's Bazar trying to address and respond to those needs. He adds health teams on the ground are administering first aid and working with other aid agencies.
The reports we have are that, yes, children are among the injured. Of course, there are also many children separated from their families. UNICEF has many learning centres as we've tried to build and bring a bit of normalcy for these kids in these camps. Many of those are feared fully burnt. Exact numbers we're trying to confirm, and we will, of course, seek to rebuild those as quickly as possible.
The International Organization for Migration, along with the UNHCR, is coordinating the relief operation. IOM spokeswoman Angela Wells says the fire, which has since subsided, consumed essential facilities, including the camp's largest health center. She says the cause of the blaze is still unknown.
IOM teams and partners worked through the night to respond to the most immediate needs of those who fled the scene. Rohingya volunteers on the ground were the first responders, helping people to safety, supporting fire response efforts, and working to support relief efforts. In the immediate aftermath, government response services, including the fire brigade, army, and humanitarian agencies, rushed to the area to put out the fire.
The World Food Program reports it immediately provided emergency rations of high-energy biscuits to the survivors, and it will provide 60,000 hot meals Tuesday to affected families. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Much more on Myanmar and the fire in the Rohingya camp can be found online at our Twitter stream, VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, and stop by our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Several dead, thousands of homes lost as fire sweeps Rohingya camp. Myanmar military junta blames protesters for violence as West imposes sanctions. Australian ruling party rocked by new sex scandal. U.S. Secretary of State Blinken to consult with NATO allies on troop withdrawal plans for Afghanistan. North Korea national makes first court appearance in money laundering case. Expanded coverage of these stories and so much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as our website, voanews.com. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Widespread flooding is disrupting the rollout of COVID-19 vaccinations in Australia as thousands of people are forced to leave their homes. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Emergency crews in eastern Australia have responded to thousands of calls for help. The rain in many areas has been unrelenting. For the first time in years, Sydney's main reservoir is overflowing, putting suburbs at risk of flooding. Authorities are reporting once-in-a-century downpours north of Sydney, and thousands of people have been told to leave their homes. Near the town of Taree, a house occupied by a young couple was washed away down a river by floodwaters on what was supposed to have been their wedding day. The bride, Sarah Saws, told Australian television the property was swept away within minutes.
I'm lost for words. I don't even know what to say. Like, everything that we own, everything that we work hard for, gone within 10 minutes, and it was out of our sight.
Campaign group Greenpeace has linked the severe storms in eastern Australia to climate change and the burning of coal, oil and gas. The wild weather is disrupting Australia's mass coronavirus inoculation program. More than 6 million Australians are now eligible for an injection in the next phase of the vaccination rollout. Australia's medical regulator has approved domestic production of the AstraZeneca vaccine. Federal Health Minister Greg Hunt says the drug is safe.
This is a fundamental decision which locks in for Australia access to 50 million units of domestically produced vaccines. It means that the manufacturing process has been approved, it's safe, effective, meets all of the requirements from one of the toughest regulators in the world.
Vaccines made by AstraZeneca and Pfizer are approved for use in Australia. One of Australia's most senior medical officials, Federal Health Department Secretary Brendan Murphy, has said international travel into and out of Australia would be severely restricted for the rest of the year until global COVID-19 vaccinations are more widely administered. Australia closed its international borders a year ago to foreign travellers because of the pandemic. Murphy said life in Australia would get back to normal, but it would take time and patience was needed. Australia has recorded 29,196 coronavirus cases since the pandemic began. 909 people have died, according to the health department. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, anti-coup protesters continued Tuesday in Dawei in southern Myanmar, with activists holding a brief march in the city. There were no confrontations with security forces, although one person reportedly was killed when a military vehicle struck his motorbike. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's nice to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Today is World Tuberculosis Day, and doctors are warning that progress in the global fight against the disease has been set back more than a decade by the coronavirus pandemic. Henry Ridgewell fills us in.
Tuberculosis killed 1.4 million people worldwide in 2019. In 2020, the coronavirus pandemic overwhelmed health services across the world. In nine countries with a high prevalence of TB, among them India, Pakistan, South Africa, and Indonesia, diagnosis and treatment fell by an average of 23%, according to analysis by the Stop TB Partnership, a non-profit hosted by the United Nations in Geneva. They say the fight against TB has been set back by 12 years.
It's an impact on all the work that we tried to do, but also the finances that were spent, all the efforts of everyone. We are basically back to kind of square one of that time.
Like COVID-19, tuberculosis is a disease of the lungs caused by bacteria rather than a virus.
A lot of the people that are dealing with TB, doctors, nurses, healthcare workers, providers, were shifted from TB to COVID.
Hospital wards used for TB patients were rapidly converted into emergency COVID-19 units. As countries imposed lockdowns to fight the pandemic, TB diagnosis and treatment were again hit hard.
Usually, people with TB are the ones that are most vulnerable and are the ones that have a lot of difficulties in reaching the healthcare. And one of the reasons can be distance, can be money, such as, you know, poverty and other barriers. These things were actually exacerbated on COVID.
That means many patients are badly infected by the time they reach any clinic or hospital.
That's what a lot of the clinicians are saying, that they observe now some very, very bad forms of tuberculosis that they didn't see in many years. These bad forms of TB means that mortality will be higher. It also means that transmission within the household will be bigger.
Ditiu says there is an opportunity to claw back lost progress. The coronavirus pandemic has forced healthcare providers and communities closer together. By combining testing, contact tracing, and treatment for COVID and TB, both diseases can be tackled at the same time. Scientists say urgent investment is also needed in new TB vaccines and treatments. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. The United States pledged Tuesday to decide together with NATO allies on whether to pull out all American troops from Afghanistan by May 1st, as stipulated in a February 2020 agreement Washington signed with the Taliban. You'll find this and all the big stories on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, scientists are still learning how the coronavirus affects the body and why it's so lethal. A Cleveland Clinic survey indicates more than half of those questioned did not know COVID-19 could affect their hearts, and nearly 70% did not know that high blood pressure also increases the risk if they get the virus. VOA's Carol Pearson has details.
One thing cardiologists know by now, people with heart problems have a higher risk for serious complications if they get COVID-19. Yet many people are unaware of this.
Many people know that it affects the lungs, but it can also affect the heart, the pumping function of the heart, the clotting mechanisms in the blood. All of this put you to a very high risk of having cardiovascular problems.
COVID can also damage healthy hearts, even if people don't show any symptoms.
We see patients who have likely had viral infections that they didn't even recognize, and yet they manifest with heart failure symptoms months or years later. So there could be a long-term implication to the health of patients who have been affected by COVID-19.
Dr. Anderson says this is true even for some patients who had healthy hearts before getting the coronavirus.
They had elevations of blood enzyme markers that were consistent with a heart attack, even though they didn't have any blockages in their coronary arteries. They had heart rhythm disturbances, and that this occurred with quite high prevalence.
Emotional stress also plays a role, says Dr. Kapadia.
People who have fear, people who have anger, it has been shown that both of these can lead to blood clotting mechanisms and can cause heart attacks.
Some of the heart damage doctors are seeing is reversible, but some is not, and it can lead to death. At the University of Texas Health Science Center at San Antonio, researchers are testing an antibiotic and a medication for diabetes. They want to see if these drugs can prevent heart damage in COVID patients. Antibiotics fight bacterial infections. They don't work on viruses. But there are tiny, bean-shaped parts inside our cells called mitochondria. Mitochondria generate chemical energy and drive many of our body's functions, including our heartbeat. Scientists believe that mitochondria evolved from a type of bacteria, so an antibiotic might protect them from the coronavirus, and the mitochondria, in turn, would protect the heart. The diabetes drug being tested also helps mitochondria continue to produce energy. The researchers hope to start clinical trials with people who have recovered from the coronavirus so doctors can see if the volunteers' hearts continue to function well long after they have recovered from COVID-19. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, heavy rainfall was forecast to ease across Australia's east coast, but floodwaters could linger for days across New South Wales state, where 15,000 people were nervously waiting for potential orders to evacuate. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, New York, one of the U.S. cities hit hardest by the coronavirus last year, is continuing to open. With commercial event organizations allowed to operate again, restaurants increasing indoor dining capacity to 50%, and live venues like Broadway theaters to start up as well. But the city is far from any kind of normalcy. Henry Morton reports.
It's been a tough year for the Big Apple. More than 3.5 million people are estimated to have left the city, at least temporarily. Tourism numbers are down by about two-thirds, and many iconic places that make New York the city that never sleeps have been closed. But the light at the end of the tunnel is starting to brighten. Event spaces like this one at the New York Historical Society are now allowed to operate again, albeit at 50% of capacity, up to 150 guests, along with many other restrictions from table placement to who can dance when.
Inquiry flow is starting to come back. We have corporate starting to ask questions about fall availability. There are some holiday party requests across corporate, social, and nonprofit. We're thrilled to finally be having much more proactive conversations about real events returning in person.
Outdoor dining has become a common sight on New York streets in the last year, but that may start to change with restaurants now allowed to operate indoor dining at 50% of capacity. A very welcome change for restaurants like Tony DiNapoli's in the city's heavily residential Upper East Side. However, elsewhere around town, the change is of little benefit if there aren't enough people to fill the newly available seats.
Prior to the pandemic, it was hard to get a table in our Tony's in Midtown. Very, very popular, very active restaurant. almost a 350-seat restaurant and busy every night. And we had to close it for almost 9 months. It's heartbreaking.
Smaller, family-owned type restaurants may struggle to see any benefit from the increase in indoor dining capacity because of social distancing rules.
They can't survive on 50%, most of them.
With the potential boost to restaurants comes the news that live performance venues such as Broadway theatres can start operating again on April 2nd, but at one-third of capacity with a limit of 100 people indoors or 200 outdoors. That was something of a surprise to New York's live venues, and many will be unable to take advantage of the lifting of restrictions until summer or fall.
The date that has been given us is much sooner than most theaters have the capacity to respond to. Our artists are not vaccinated. We don't have funding to do the kind of work that needs to be done to our theaters to bring them back into safe conditions for our audiences and our artists. Artists need to rehearse.
The latest lifting of restrictions has come as a welcome relief to many New Yorkers. However, with so many regulations, it will still take some time for many organizations to take full advantage of the change as the Big Apple continues on its winding road back to normalcy. Henry Morton for VOA News, New York.
South by Southwest, the annual event in Austin, Texas that brings together technology, music, politics, and Hollywood, is happening this year, digitally, after being canceled last year due to COVID-19. Michelle Quinn joins us with the latest.
Help creative types achieve their goals. That is the stated mission of South by Southwest, the annual event in Austin, Texas that brings together people from entertainment, technology, politics, and more. But it was the organizers who had to tap into their own creativity to pull off this year's event.
It has been a very, challenging year for us, difficult year for us. We have 30 years of experience producing live events.
Because of the pandemic, the city of Austin canceled the 2020 event 10 days before it was set to begin. The expected crowd of 40,000 people did not fill Austin's streets, bars, and hotels. This year, as has happened at other events worldwide, South By, as it is called, is entirely online, with most of its 500 sessions, 300 films, 200 bands pre-recorded. It is still set to attract 35,000 attendees, with 33% international, up from 25%. Brazil and Asia continue as the top draw of attendees.
The virtual aspect of the event allows us to reach new audiences, people who could never travel to Austin for South by Southwest.
From their computers, visitors can walk through a simulated Austin with its landmarks like the Red River Cultural District. Inside the Paramount Theater, they can attend lectures and concerts and use the chat function to talk to other attendees.
2 or 3 years from now, more and more event-related content will be delivered this way.
Another boon for being all digital? Booking hard-to-get speakers and performers was easier, including business magnate Richard Branson and U.S. political leaders such as Stacey Abrams and U.S. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. The musician Willie Nelson, who lives in Austin and has played at the event before, will speak at South By for the first time. There is a mantra the organizers repeat.
Trying to remind ourselves that within all those challenges, lots and lots of opportunities.
Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
That's our program for today. Thanks for joining us on VOA Asia. Until the same time tomorrow, continue with us online. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Look us up under our name, VOA Asia. We also thank those who helped bring the program to you, our managing editor, Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.